Hello, this is Dean Gocher. I'm founder and director of the Institution for Authority Research. I encourage you to trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not to your own understanding, and in all your ways acknowledge Him. Let Him be the one who directs your paths. That's Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. And this program is about a process that explains those scriptures. First verse is trust in the Lord with all your heart. The second part of that verse is lean not to your own understanding, and that's what I'm going to explain here on what's called diaprax. It's simply the praxis or the practice of the dialectic process, which is leaning to your own understanding. This dialectic process isn't new. Actually, we find it starting in the garden. It's the very process that Satan used on Eve in the garden, Genesis 3, 1 through 6. And its intended purpose is to undo the effect of God in our lives. The Hebrews 12 gives us a descriptive of that pattern or paradigm of God. God says in Isaiah 55:9, my ways are not your ways, neither your thoughts my thoughts. As far as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. In other words, my paradigm, my way of thinking or doing business, if you want to put it that way, and your way of thinking, your way of doing business are not the same. They are so opposite. They are so different. And it's important, therefore, we understand the difference between these two paradigms. The Bible warns us we're not to be ignorant of Satan's devices. And so diaprax is simply this justifying of ourselves. And we find that happening in the garden. First of all, there's a chart that I go through in every meeting. It simply lays out the thesis, a position, the antithesis, the opposing position, which there's a twist to this. It's more than that. And then the synthesis. Now, to try to make this as simple as possible, the thesis, when you look at from the Word of God, is a father's authority. Now, the distinction of a father, and we find this in Hebrews, again, 12, 7 through 11, is, and Marxism, see, and I'm going to show you that Hegel and Marx and Freud all had this understanding. They understood what the Word of God was all about. And it is about a son who took on the form of a man and humbled himself under his father, and was obedient to his father in all things. Jesus said, what my father commands, that's what I do. And then he gives all of mankind that same paradigm. See, he who does my father's will in heaven is my brother, my sister, my mother. And therein we find a pattern that we also find in the garden. God gave Adam, you could say a child, as a father gives a child, a command. Now, this is the descriptive of father. He gives rules and commands. Now, it's not enough to give rules and commands, because you know from experience, if you've tried this, your kids can do whatever they want without the second part, which is chastening or the threat of chastening. Now, we find in Hebrews, God actually has another aspect to this, and that's he calls it bastard, which means you're not one of my children. In the case of the home, it would be the child is cast out. So the father's authority is he gives commands and rules. He chastens when they're disobeyed, and he blesses when they're obeyed. If you obey me, you're blessed. If you disobey me, you're cursed. And he casts out those who refuse to accept this pattern, this paradigm. And that's called a patriarchal paradigm. It's a top-down system. And when you look at the dialectic, it has three steps. There's a thesis, there's an antithesis, there's a synthesis. But in this pattern, in the patriarchal pattern, there is no synthesis. There's simply thesis, the father's position, his giving commands and rules, his chastening when they're disobeyed, and his casting out when that office, that authority system is rejected. The antithesis we find in Romans 7, 22 through 25, and it's where Paul says, I do that which I don't want to do, and I don't do that which I want to do. So there's a tension between the father's authority and the child's nature. Now, the child's nature, and we all came into this world with this, is the law of the flesh. And that's what Paul writes about. He talks about the law of God and the law of the flesh. And they're at odds with one another. Now, the law of the flesh is, it's our nature, it's our human nature, is to approach pleasure and avoid pain. And in every meeting, I go through a chart where I show that dopamine, a chemical that our body naturally produces, which associates to pleasure. It's actually that wanting that we have within us. You desire something in the environment that is gratifying. You're not aware that it's gratifying until you become aware of it. Say you touch something pleasurable, you're not aware of it. Nerve is activated, the right nerve to that type of pleasure. Touch, taste, sight, smell, sound. We have all kinds of nerves in our body. That impulse is sent to the brain. Partway to the brain, nerves meet one another in a synaptic gap. The one for pleasure, and there are some 60 different neurotransmitters, the one for pleasure is dopamine. And when that is emancipated or liberated in this synaptic gap, in this little space between the nerves, it is sent across, it travels across, and it hits the receptor of the next nerve, and then the impulse goes to the brain. In the brain, you have 10 billion plus or give neurons, and some of those have 10,000 dendrites that connect with other nerves. It's like a holograph up there, very complex. But in those connections, those synaptic gaps, dopamine is released as well. So at that point, you now become aware of something that's gratifying in the environment. In other words, it is your nature to approach the pleasurable object. So first of all, you have to locate it. So you look into the environment with your eyes to find it. And then once you locate it, it is your nature then to reach for it in some way, shape, or form to obtain it. Because the objective is, if I can obtain this object, say a child sees a toy, and if he can get a hold of that toy that stimulated the pleasure to begin with, he can continue the experience of pleasure. In other words, dopamine is emancipated as he's in contact with the toy. The child, and really cutting this simple, making this simple, the child is not in love with a toy. The child is in love with the dopamine that is emancipated or liberated into the synaptic gap with his contact with the toy. In other words, the nerve itself, once it reaches or touches something that is, or comes in contact with something that's gratifying, its emancipation in the synaptic gap of dopamine is what the child wants. And so the child will do whatever he can to retain the object of gratification to sustain the dopamine emancipation. The problem with this is, say, in the brain, anytime you encounter something new that's pleasurable, dopamine is emancipated or liberated. But as you repeat it over and over, it is lost. And so you have to increase, or you have to change the object of gratification to get the same amount, if not more, dopamine. Now, all habitual drugs are tied to dopamine. That's not only cocaine and meth, it is also tobacco, caffeine. Anything that when you withdraw from it, you get the shakes. Your body craves it. That is tied to the dopamine. It imitates the dopamine, it emancipates it, or it prevents its reuptake. So chemicals have different effects on this dopamine event in our life, this wanting of pleasure. So when a person's on a drug, he will do whatever it takes to get access to that dopamine imitating, stimulating, preventing reuptake chemical. And so that's his action. So we have the flesh, which is the nervous system, the eyes, which look into the environment, and also by just simply, once you've become aware of what is gratifying, you can imagine it. You can think upon it and stimulate dopamine as well. That's the imagination of men's hearts. God said the imagination of men's hearts were evil continuously before the flood, then after the flood from his youth on. And so we have this nature of lusting for or after pleasure. Lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is our ability to control or attain this object of gratification for the sake of dopamine emancipation. You build the house the way you do, you shape the room, you design it the way you do, because when you come into it, you want dopamine emancipation and or liberation. And so the person who has the prettiest house, you would say, well, they're the most successful person, because everybody who drives by it gets that dopamine moment. Even if it's not their house, in their mind, they can still get that dopamine, and they can dream that that could be their house someday. If things went well. And of course, that's always associated with a wise person. You wouldn't think of a wise person pushing a grocery cart around at the park with bags full of clothing and sleeping in the park. You know, if you sort of look at this scripturally, there would be a problem with Jesus, because after he did miracles, he would go to the park and sleep at night, you know. And you could, of course, say, well, the park was a garden and it was a beautiful place to be in. But his whole life was not bound by dopamine. See, Satan offered him these dopamine moments in the wilderness. You know, turn the stone into bread. Because, see, dopamine is also emancipated or liberated. It's not bad in and of itself when you smell freshly baked bread, or you see beautiful sunsets, or somebody compliments you. If you do a job well, you should be complimented. If you obey, you should be blessed. And so dopamine is involved with that event. So Satan comes along and he offers Jesus some dopamine emancipating experiences. You know, turn the stone into bread. You need food. 40 days of fasting, you're ready to die. The next thing you're going to use for energy is your kidney, your heart, your liver, the vital organs. And therefore, you know, wisdom would simply say, practicality would say, now is the time to eat. But Jesus' response was not how he felt, which would tie him to the dopamine, or what he thought, because our leaning to our own understanding, see, ties us to this dopamine experience, this moment. He says, Dad says, it is written, man doesn't live by bread alone. Well, okay, let's stop here a moment. Now, if you don't eat bread, if you don't have something to eat right now, you're going to die. But his finishing of that statement was that verse from his father, but by every word which proceedeth from the mouth of God. So he changes a temporal event, which is tied to the nervous system and the world around, which would be the lust of the flesh, the desire of the flesh, and in this case would simply to stay alive. But he sets a precedent, a priority over that event. Every word which proceedeth from the mouth of God. Other words, the word of God is more important in your life than the very bread you eat, the very breath you take. Because when you're dealing with God, you're dealing with the soul. You're dealing with eternity, not just the sensuous moment. And then Satan shows him, there's the eyes, the kingdoms of the world. And Jesus' response is, it is written, man doesn't, thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou worship. Because Satan offered Jesus what he's going to come back to judge, and said, okay, if you bow down and worship me, I'll give you what supposedly you came from. But see, the Father loved the world. For God so loved the world that he sent his only begotten Son. Now, the importance of understanding the objective of dialectic thinking is to get rid of the one. Because when you have one, there's only one right answer. See? And so, dialectic means two or more, and it's in dialogue. Whereas one is just simply you preach and teach. I mean, 2 + 2 = 4. And so you just simply teach it and cannot be any other number. Now, if it could be some other number, now we could dialogue, because now it's an opinion. But it's a fact. It's established. And so Jesus is simply saying, my Father has given us the commands. First of all, we're to live by every word which proceeds from his mouth. We're to worship him. In other words, not to worship the creation, but to worship the Creator. Not be a lovers of pleasure, but lovers of God. Those two different paradigms, see? Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not to your own understanding. Because if Jesus had leaned to his own understanding, practicality would have said, turn the stone into bread, bow down and worship the devil, for the kingdoms of the world. And then the third one was jump off the pinnacle. Actualize yourself. The world will now know you are the Son of God. And Jesus' response is, don't tempt God. See, and so it's easy. It's our nature, human nature, to do or to participate in what Satan offered Jesus in the wilderness. In fact, we find in the garden Eve doing the very same thing, except fulfilling Satan's dialectic process. I called Genesis 3, 1 through 6, Satan's Genesis project. It is simply the dialectic process being put into praxis or into action. And we've all done it. It's simply our fallen human nature. Again, our lust of the flesh, because Eve saw that the tree was good for food. Well, you know, all the other trees were good for food. God said you could eat of those. And then he said, you cannot eat of this tree. And therefore, that tree, even though it was good for food, the objective was obedience. It wasn't, the flesh wasn't the issue. It was spiritual. It was the issue of the soul. And so when Eve looked at the forbidden tree, quote unquote, she was right scientifically, materially. See, dialectic materialism. She was the first scientist. She was comparing common. She was finding what these trees had in common with this tree. And what they had in common was they were good for food, because the tree of knowledge, good and evil, did not physically, in and of itself, kill Adam and Eve. God removed them and all men from the tree of life. Of course, that's been reoffered through Jesus Christ, who is the tree of life. But at that moment, when they turned to leaning to their own understanding, the dialectic process, their only outcome in Eve's case right here was to justify that there was nothing wrong with the tree. In fact, Satan said it. He starts this out with a neurolinguistic sentence structure. Yea, hath God said. That's an embedded statement in a question. Thou shalt not eat of every tree in the garden. And her response was an opinion, because your opinion always carries the nervous system, the touch, taste, sight, smell, sound, the dopamine, the approaching of pleasure, and also the avoiding of pain. Because she says, for God has said, thou shalt not eat of it, and that's sort of true, but that's a paraphrase, nor touch it. And so in that touching, you see that every time she's going by the good trees, the trees she can eat, she's getting a dopamine moment, but she's also getting that same dopamine emancipation when she goes by the thou shalt not tree. And so when she says, nor touch it, she's going, I ought to be able to. Now, I've shared this in prior programs. The ought is always engendered or created from a thou shalt not. You can't say, well, I ought to be able to go out if somebody has never told you you couldn't go out. You can only say ought when somebody said not. Say, Dad says you can't go out. You want to go out and have fun, dopamine. Now you try to get Dad into dialogue, because a cannot is rigid. You know, it is written, you know, thus saith the Lord, thou shalt not. And the only way to liberate yourself from that paradigm so that you can liberate the dopamine is to get the parent or God into dialogue. And so that's what Satan does. He will get you into dialogue. See, two or more. Dialogue requires two or more. And you can dialogue with yourself. Now, I can't dialogue with yourself. I can't talk to yourself, and you can't talk to myself, but I can talk to myself. But first of all, we will try to talk with the authority figure. We'll try to get them into dialogue. So Dad says you can't go out, and then you go, why? Now, the why is to get him into dialogue, because if you get the authority over you into dialogue, they can't chasten you. Because if Dad says, well, I don't think you should go out, or I don't feel like you should go out, that's an opinion, and he can't chasten you. It's only when he gives you a command, remember rules and commands, that engenders the right to chasten. But dialogue does not give you the right to chasten. See, it's just an opinion amongst opinions. And so even as a child, we had within us, and this is what Hegel noted, that, oh, this is universal. This universal dialogue is within all, even comes from childhood. And so therefore, if we can create an environment where this aspect of humanity, which is common to all men, can be activated, actualized, we can deliver ourselves from God. We can deliver ourselves or humanity can be redeemed or liberated from a higher authority that represses, restrains, alienates it from itself or from the rest of the world. Because, you know, in your home, when your dad gives you commands and you meet other children with fathers who give their children different commands, if you're obedient to your father, you don't get along with the other children. So if you want world peace and socialist harmony, worldly peace and socialist harmony, you've got to undo the effect of the parent, the father, upon the child. And that's all Satan was doing in a garden. But you have to engender or create an environment where the child can feel safe in sharing their opinion. And so that was the embedded statement in a question. That neurolinguistic sentence structure was to bring forth the ought that was suppressed. Because, again, you say to dad, why can't I go out? And dad says, because I said so. And so then it's your nature then to talk to yourself. You can't talk to him anymore because he's not reasonable. He's not practical. He's not in touch with your heart's desire of the moment. But you can talk to yourself, and self is always in agreement with the dopamine emancipation. Now, you in the past, we've heard self-control, self-discipline. The Bible says, humble yourself, deny yourself. Those are moments where you listen to what the Father says, and when self, you start to talk to yourself, and then the conscience, conscience, science is and not, see? And that's the Father's language. And so the Father's language rules within your mind. And the conscience rules. And it cuts off this dialogue with yourself. The dialectic agenda is to reactivate, to give you a safe zone where you feel free or safe in dialoguing with yourself, but externally. Because you do it internally. You know, dad says you can't. You go, why? To get him into dialogue. He won't go there because he says, because I said so. So then you talk to yourself, well, I ought to be able to go out. You know, oughta, shoulda, mighta, coulda. And, but that's you, individually, private. You know, you're sort of a cyst. You've covered with your father's authority, but internally you have this leaning to your own understanding. You're reflecting within yourself how the world ought to be. You don't realize that we are by nature philosophers. Philosophy is simply you're just satisfied with the way things are, and you're thinking about how the things ought to be. And so the role of dialectic reasoning is to now get you in a room with somebody else, and that would be Satan with Eve in a garden. It takes two or more. And he creates an environment where she can safely dialogue, because she says, nor touch it. And then she says, lest you die. Now, there's the threat of God. Okay, the commands and rules, the chastening, and three, the cast out. So those are all manifest in Eve's statement, but she adds what's called the superego, her feelings, her ought, nor touch it. So to move you from the conscience to the superego, which is really a seared conscience, I have to reactivate your feelings, which are internal. You're talking to yourself. I oughta, shoulda, mighta, coulda. And if I can get your child in a group grade, this is what the group grade's all about. It is simply Genesis 3, 1 through 6, and get your child to share their oughts, their dissatisfaction with your restraints, your prejudice. See, when you tell your child this is right and that's not, you're prejudging, you're setting a prejudice standard upon that child. God is prejudice. Prejudice is you have pre-established standards and rules and commands that your children are accountable to. They're not accountable to the world. All this of the world is lust, flesh, lust, the eyes, and pride of life. But to the Father. See this? Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and life. No man cometh to the Father but by me. So what is his way? Obedience. We are to take captive every thought to the obedience of Christ. Well, if you do the dialectic process, you have to undo that. And that's all Satan was doing in the garden, creating this quote-unquote safe zone so she could think through her feelings. They ought. Then she says, lest you die. And then Satan says, oh, you won't die. Now, that's the lie. The lie to you today is that you can think and do whatever you feel like doing and not be held accountable. That's the lie. That's the dialectic lie. Because See, in yourself, you're already going oughta, shoulda, mighta, coulda, in defiance to what God said. And so you're already practicing a lie within yourself. But the dialectic agenda is to get that out in the open with others. Get a room full of students, share their dissatisfaction. Have you ever been told to do something you didn't want to do? Instantly, every child now can readily identify with that home experience with a father saying you can't do something that is dopamine emancipating. Which, by the way, is stimulus response. You can't do this. The tyrant cannot rule with stimulus response mentality. Freudian psychology, Pavlov's dog, Thorndike's chickens, you know, Skinner's rats. You know, you can't be in that domain and manipulatable unless the dopamine is flowing. Unless you are stimulated by the environment and you have a want for whatever's in the environment. And it can just be in your head. As long as somebody gives you a perception, you can have it. You'll follow them. You know, that's the bribery of the world. And so Satan was simply setting Eve up, setting the world up. Adam just abdicates. But since Adam, we've all been born as children in this world, which is approach, pleasure, avoid pain. That's the first thing we come into this world with. We don't come with thou shalt nots. That's what the parent, quote unquote, inflicts upon the child, according to dialectic reasoning. So the objective, therefore, was to create this safe zone where the child can now share what they've internally been talking to themselves about. Now they can share it with other children. They can share their common odd. Abraham Maslow said we have to create an environment of oddiness. And that's what the Common Core classroom is all about. That's what the group grade is all about. It used to be one teacher up front imparting facts and then chasing you if you didn't get them right, give you a bad grade. And if you disrespect their authority to give you rules and commands and chasing you, they had a paddle. And then if you refuse to submit to that, you are cast out. See, that old school system reflected a father's authority. Even though it was a woman up front, there was still this recognition of the patriarchal paradigm. We'll continue in the next section.